from season 2, episode 3, Tether is over. But guys, where are we? We are on the From podcast here on Post Show Recaps, talking about MGM Plus's From season 2. And oh my gosh, it's really, really terrifying. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler. I am joined here by the guy with the rebar sticking out of his noggin, Rich Filiberto, aka DM Philly Rich.
How am I doing, Josh? How am I doing? Am I okay? I've been here all week. I'm trying not to move a lot. I'm kind of hungry. I could use some strawberries.
I got strawberries for you. I don't think you should move. Do everything that you can to not move, I think, would be the move.
I'm just going to sit here stilly until my phone alarm goes off, and we'll see who else joins us.
Okay, well, hopefully all of you out there in Frumsville, Greater Frumsville, are joining us here on Post Show Recaps in the Frumsville feed. If you are not currently doing that, if you are a From fan and you are not checking out all of our From content, there's an easy way to make sure you are able to do that. Go to postshowrecaps.com/from. That's the RSS link. When you search by URL in your podcast player of choice, that is going to get you subscribed to the Post Show Recaps From feed. So that RSS link, once again, is postshowrecaps.com/from. We are also coming your way from the Down the Hatch podcast feed. If you've got feedback about From and our From dates happening here on the Frumsville pod, you can send them in. Josh@postshowrecaps.com will go directly to me. We'll get them onto the podcast. And if you want commercial-free versions of the From podcast, patreon.com/postshowrecaps is the way for commercial-free versions of all of your From pods at every single level. That's patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Rich, we are talking about Tether, round 3 here of From's sophomore season.
It's going quick, Josh. It got creepy. I was saying to you before we started recording, but season 2 of From going hard on the horror meter. This was a very unsettling hour of TV. They doubled down, creepy children bar in the head. It was a lot, man.
Yeah, yeah. Can I offer up an alternate title for season 2, episode 3? I feel like Tether doesn't quite stress the severity of the gross thing in this episode. Might I offer up the Grim Rebar? Would be my alternate title for this episode of From.
It's a little spoilery, but that was some very grim rebar. Yeah.
How about this? This is another one. There's a spike through that woman's head and she's somehow still alive.
Oh my God. She's still talking.
Who's talking now is also a possible title on the table. All right. Well, let's tell people what happened in this episode of From. Then we will break it down storyline by storyline. You ready for a quick plot recap?
I'm ready. Give it to me.
Here we go. From season 2, episode 3, Tether. It's the morning after the Bussy's first night in town, and everybody's hanging on by the thinnest of threads, except for a woman named Kelly, who is hanging on by a metal pole shoved through her head and into a tree because From. Yeah. The monsters left her this way because why? An actual reason or just a further demonstration of their horrific power? Either way, Kelly survives just long enough to thoroughly traumatize Ellis, Kenny, and Christy, who are helpless but to witness the slow end of this poor woman's life. Elsewhere in town, Jade tries to get some clues out of Victor, Tabitha starts seeing nightmare twins a la The Shining, and Boyd isn't telling anyone about the nightmare worms lurking underneath his skin. And that's not the only thing lurking around the town. At the end of the episode, Kenny comes face to face with Sarah, last seen in the forest with Boyd, now somehow returned to the late Father Cottry's basement and sure to cause a scandal when the rest of Frumsville finds out she's here. But that's a next week problem. For now, let's dig into everything that happened this week, Rich. I'll grab the bar.
Okay, you pull quickly. A lot happened this week, I felt like, Josh. While like a lot didn't happen, a lot really did happen, I felt like. It was a very full episode, a big hour of TV. I loved getting Boyd back into town with everybody, but really I just was transfixed on that bar. I could not look away.
It's really hard because I don't think that that was necessarily the most important thing that happened on From in this episode, but I also feel like there's no way to start a conversation about this week's episode of From without getting into the fact that much of it centered on a woman who had a metal bar sticking out of her head and buried into a tree, and she manages to live through like at least a few hours of that.
Yep. She surprised you, right? That real quick, like, oh, hey, I'm okay. I'm fine. Actually, I just have a metal bar in my head. Did you see it coming?
Part of me felt like, okay, like where she, that seems like to be an actual human being as the actor pinned to the tree. It's not just like some sort of life model decoy that they have pinned to the tree, Rich. And on top of that, the previously on does get into a little bit of the Brian and Kelly story. It's like, okay, so are we actually going to see like something that happens here? And then Kelly is pinned to a tree and part of me is like, okay, well, there's no way she's like actually alive, is there? And then it's like, okay, but this is from, and then she lurches awake. I'm like, okay, I'm still scared shitless right now. This is horrifying.
I just felt like such a naive TV viewer for a moment there where I'm like, oh, this is going to be a really macabre situation that these two are at. Ellis and Kenny could have to get the body off the tree. It's like a little bit of like bad sitcom energy of like them trying to move the couch and pivot. I was waiting for some of that. So it really like surprised me that she was awake. I was very shocked by all of it. It surprised me perhaps more so that nobody suggested getting a hacksaw or cutting the tree down. I mean, again, I live in the country, Josh, so I'm looking at practical solutions here.
Did you have some thoughts about like, was there a way to do this? Was there a way to make this so that could Kelly have just wandered around with rebar in her head?
I definitely think so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, dare I say it would have been like probably terribly uncomfortable for poor Kelly, but somebody with the hacksaw could have cut through that piece of rebar. You had good clearance between the back of her head and the tree. Like I could have cut through that in half an hour. You give me 45 minutes.
We just put band-aids on either side of the rebar and just leave it?
I think you bandage it up, you cut it down as close as you can, kind of, you know, you get the excess like length off so she's not getting like hooked on stuff. She doesn't have to go through life like that. Oh, man. Right? And then head wrap and like move along, right? If it works, it works.
Well, it doesn't work out for poor Kelly, who is played by Phoebe Rex, is the name of the actress who brings Kelly to life. I thought that while this is not the most groundbreaking storyline, and I guess it does do something for Boyd's story as far as his continued thinking that, like, is any of this real? Is there any way that this is actually real? Because Brian is the name of Kelly's boyfriend who is already dead. They made her watch, and then Kelly is pinned to the tree. And it turns out that Brian Kelly is the name of the soldier who is the first man Boyd ever watched die during one of his first tours at war. And so Boyd is taking that as like this big sign of we must be like in some sort of unreal situation. We must be in some sort of place. Like maybe Abby was right about some of this, I think, is sort of the undercurrent of that. And Don is being like, all right, Boyd, you're going to have to like either tell me what happened to you out there in the forest, or you're going to have to shut the F up because you're going to have to shut the from up. No one can hear what you're talking about right now. This is no good. You're supposed to be the leader of this place. And I certainly can't handle it, which means no one else can. So like that seemed to be like the most theory moving piece of the Kelly storyline. And yet I also think that it was very emblematic of what's great about this show. Strong character work, unbelievably impossible situations, grim horror as well, and somehow some way making you really like sad and emotional and invested in the survival of a random character who has a metal pole shoved in their head.
Yeah, it worked really successfully. I talked a lot about how much I loved that RV scene in season one and even like the house collapse last time. But so much of the structure of this type of show, it's about the response of the people in this supernatural circumstance, right? As they're pushed to their absolute limits, how far will they go? What are they willing to do? How are they going to rise to the occasion, right? So really focusing it into like these very specific, like kind of accident isolated locations. Like I think we talked about it last time, Josh, but big, like, you know, the Lost vibes of like the 108 crash, like 815 crash site, like the whole like focusing in on this place where the trauma is happening, I think is really strong. But I'm with you. As Alice is like weeping for this girl, it like broke my heart. I was like, this is brutal, right? And Boyd showing up like, no, you have to leave, to which Christy's going to be like, nope, I'm not going anywhere. This is my watch and it has not ended. There's really compelling character work between them all while we watch this poor girl stuck to the tree.
Yeah. Christy may be the MVP of the episode for me, I think. Christy is already, like, she's in the middle of everything that's going on with her and Marielle, who is still, Marielle is close to the LVP of the episode for me, still giving Christy, like, a real hard time, despite the irrefutable proof that people are getting savagely killed here. Don't love that from Marielle, but Christy, like, she's dealing with that. She goes out into the forest. Her bedside manner would make Dr. Jack Shepard take a real hard look at his own in the mirror. She's oh, so no kind. Kidding. She's so kind to this woman, Kelly. When Kelly starts to piece together, like, this is really bad, right? And Christy doesn't bullshit her at all. She's like, yeah. And Kelly's like, am I going to die? And Christy goes, yeah. And she just sits there with her for the whole thing and is trying to make this as humane as humanly possible. I really appreciated Christy's contributions to this storyline. I thought it was really, really good. She's a compelling character. Her storyline this season obviously is like very fraught with this one-of-a-kind situation of somebody being drawn into the town from somebody's actual life. This hasn't happened before, it sounds like. Or did they say it was rare? I couldn't tell if this had never happened before, if this was like a rare thing.
I think this has never happened before. Yeah. I think that the monsters are changing the way they play the game, which is, you know, like part of the paradigm shift that we kind of heard happened once Boyd got the talismans and their behavior changed. Right. So I think that things are evolving to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And yeah, Christy definitely like an all-star. I mean, it's worth noting that amidst all of that as like the one person that's handling the situation really effectively, she like gives the reality drop to the boys of like, you guys don't get it. Like this is 15 hours on a good day, and yes, like now she's going to die. Like we can't just leave her out here tonight. Like she's the one to make the hard call there. Jack Shepard would be proud.
Yeah. There is some sort of Mistborn reference I should be making right now, I feel like, with the metal bar stuck in poor Kelly's head, but that's as close as I'm willing to go with all of that. Blood magic. Well, there might be some blood magic that's happening here, Rich, because there's this final moment before she dies where she starts like hearing this thing. She's hearing something very specific and no one else can hear it. Is this just the metal bar finally doing its thing, Rich, or is she plugged into something? Like, is there something that she is attuned to that the rest of these people are not? Like, do you think that that was like a medical issue purely, or was it also like a Frumsville problem?
Do we think the metal bar was picking up radio waves from Colony House?
Yeah.
Is that what's going on?
Maybe.
No, I mean, I think that given how like, you know, how well she was handling herself right up into that moment, I think we have to like jump to the supernatural lest we forget supernatural vaguely shape-shifting monsters did in fact pin her to Sentry with the metal bar. Right. So her hearing things like not the craziest thing we could imagine, and blood magic indeed, like to whatever is going on with Boyd's new infection here. I do think there's something to that. Right.
Yeah.
We have it called out later on. Some people come here. They have dreams. It's hard to say who gets them, who doesn't, why not. So that's all like out there in the ether, right?
Yeah. That's when they go to the Brundles you're referring to, right? When
Brundles. What's up with that?
Fatima takes Elgin to the Brundles. And I love Elgin being like, so why are they called the Brundles? And Fatima's like, I don't know. They're just called the Brundles.
It's such a real thing, though. As a guy that lives out in the country with a lot of like weird little swimming hole, like, oh, this is Fat Man's Hole.
Uh-huh.
Like, why do they call it that? I don't know. You know, that's what they told me when I was six and I came here the first time. So the Brundles, like, I buy it.
This is the Jeeves. Why is it called the Jeeves? I don't know. Ask them. The Brundles. It's a good scene where we are seeing Elgin kind of like coming to terms with the idea that he is unique in, or like close enough to unique in this environment, that he is one of these rare chosen few who is connected to premonitions and nightmares and an ability to see the place to some extent. We don't know what Elgin's vision was yet. All we know is that he was deeply chilled when he woke up to the point that he was like throwing up on people. And he tells Marielle that one time, like, she's like, do you know where you are? And he goes, do you? And he asked to see the lake. He asked to see the body of water. So Elgin's dream, I feel like, is a very big deal. And I think it's probably good that we haven't seen it yet. I feel like it's a compelling storytelling choice to like let us watch Elgin kind of like clearly piece together some of the things he knows, and let's wait for him to kind of add it all up for us.
Yeah, I think that we shift him over on the board with a victor of like, what does this guy know that we desperately want to? What revelations does he have in store for us? And I just had big vibes of like, I wonder what's underneath that body of water. Like, could it be a bunch of monsters, dead people, a swan station? You never know, Josh. You never know.
Yeah, gosh, a swan station would be good right about now. They're worried about rations on top of it, it sounds like.
I know.
They suddenly have 22 mouths to feed. That's a lot. So only three people got killed among the Bussies crew. It was just Kelly and Brian and that one poor guy.
It doesn't track, right? I mean, I got the impression that they rounded up a bunch of dead corpses. There is a great beat where, like, when Victor goes to Jade to get the violin in the background, there are people just, like, wheeling corpses down the street on like little red wagons.
Yeah.
So I think there's a handful.
I probably got the math wrong. I think I got the math wrong. I would guess that it was me. It's typically me. Certainly like the two old people, unfortunately, who died on the bus from Smiley. So I think the numbers are bad for
the numbers are bad. I think the 22 was just the amount of people that they had like accounted for. Right. Yep. And there's these three rogues out there between, I get the impression Brian and Kelly are two of them. And that leaves me with the one, like you did note this. So I was like curious, okay, who is this 25th person? Like,
got it.
It's been with me since the episode ended.
Yeah. And there's no one who we have obviously seen who kind of qualifies for that 25th spot. So
no,
we're
talking all of our regulars, right? Rain Dance Lady, the bus driver, Jimmy from Yellowstone. We got Brian and Kelly. We got like most of the familiar faces, right? I don't think this is somebody that we should be noting isn't here.
Yeah, who is the 25th body? I don't think it's going to be a major mystery here in season two, but you never know. Always worth clocking these things. Always worth jotting these things down. Let's talk about some of the bus people, because I feel like this episode sort of started to shine a light on them a little bit more. We know most of their names at this point, I think, even if we don't necessarily know all of their names or all of their motivations. The person who we don't know is somebody who I want to start calling Grandma Racetrack.
Excellent. I wanted to call her Pony Girl, but
yeah,
so
Pony Girl works.
Either works. Yep.
The Pony Queen, who is the older woman who was doing the rain dance back in the first episode of the season. She comes to Jim, and Jim is asking questions about how did you guys get here, and what does it mean that you guys came here from this place? And she has revealed that she's just been going around the country, going to various racetracks. That's cool, I guess. It's the Kentucky Derby timing. Was this synergistic, Rich?
I don't know. What is that, early spring mint juleps?
Don't drink the mint juleps. They'll take you to Frontville. You'll see the tree.
Don't drink the mint juleps. I love this lady. I have no idea, but she's so weird. And the whole way that she's like dealing with Jim is Jim's going like full Frodo Baggins of like, what's in your pockets? You know, she just has this vibe and is very mysterious, but like effervescent and like the retired, like, I don't care anymore kind of attitude. I'm traveling the country, checking out the ponies, betting on the horses. He's like, oh, what is this, a charter bus? She just gives him like, I don't know, man, it's a bus with wheels and a door, you know, like, what do you want, Jim? I am like transfixed, Josh. I have to know what's going on with her, and I'm going to lose it when something eats her face.
Something is inevitably to eat her face, I think. Unless, again, does she eat the face first? I don't know. I'm still sort of like, can there be some incognito monsters? Is this sleeper monsters, you know,
like
waiting to be activated?
Game situation where like the manager is in the building, undercover boss?
Or like a Skrull, right? Like it could be some sort of shape-shifting nonsense could be occurring. But that would be a big escalation for the rules. So she's somebody who we're getting to know a little bit more in this episode. And then the other one who I feel like is just sort of further solidifying themselves as a person to watch is this guy, Randall, Jimmy from Yellowstone, as we call him. And Randall has a rifle and he wants to take it and he does not want to abide by the rules of the town. But Boyd has returned from his expedition through the forest, Rich, and he basically says, okay, cool. If you want the gun, just go off in the woods and see how that works out for you. But if you want a roof over your head, maybe give up the gun.
Boyd handles this so well, man. He looks so good in this coat too. I don't know what it is. I'm like, I'm the sheriff with like the kind of slouchy jeans and his coat. Yep. He just like has this menacing old West town kind of martial energy, you know, and he comes in hard, but like, I've had a hell of a week. Let me tell you something, Jimmy from Yellowstone. I'm like, you don't want to push me, man. I've had a bad week.
I have worms in my arm. Okay. You know, this is the least of my problems.
Really, you are the least of my problems, so give me the gun. I do love that this guy like knows, like, oh, I'm not gonna f with Boyd, right? There's a little bit of that. We clocked that kind of he's that military type. Now we know he's got a firearm. He seems capable for all of like his bad tendencies. He did like jump to help when Jim got trapped in the basement, right? You know, so I think that you know, some Sawyer upside potential, I think, for Randall.
Yes, right? Some Sawyer upside. I feel like I almost feel like one of these people who comes to the town probably ought to ultimately be on the side of the proverbial anaconda snakes. Like,
it's got to be the bus driver, right, Josh? I mean, she set them all right.
It's true. I mean, she could be on the list, but I feel like we just haven't really gotten that so much on the show, is like these arrivals who then kind of snap. Obviously, I'm saying that in the episode where Sarah returns, which we'll talk about. But I think that one of the people on the bus coming here and kind of like, if not breaking bad, then at least acting poorly and causing problems in a way where like redemption is not supremely on the table, at least not before consumption at the hungry maws of the monsters. Because I think like Jade is sort of in that Sawyer spot, as we said, like sort of like that Sawyer Saeed hybrid on the show. Good with the gadgets, also good with quips. I feel like Randall's just going to take that same role potentially, unless he kind of goes towards Dark Sawyer territory and is somebody that we can kind of like rally against.
I think if Jade has got that like Sawyer Saeed energy, then he's a little bit more like, dare I say it, but like Sawyer Kate, you know, of like a little bit dangerous. Like, I've got secrets, I'm hiding things, but also like, I don't know, man. Again, I'm like naive enough to have thought the girl with the spike in her head was going to be dead all episode. So I could easily be wrong, but I could see the heart of gold showing itself at some point from Randall. Like, I think if there's a plant in the bus, it is somebody unassuming, like our rain dance lady, or back to the bus driver, or like, dare I say, Elgin, who it's not Elgin.
Yeah. Do you think back to might be a time traveler, back to the future?
Oh yeah, back to the future. I was just talking about that season 2 episode 7 of Dark. There's a great reference there of like back to the future. Anyway, yeah. She could well be.
That's my secret cap. I'm always talking about back to the future.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Elsewhere in the episode, Rich, Boyd has returned to town, and I think he's having a kind of hard time readjusting.
It's a little tough. He's not processing well. The whole like opening of him like, okay, what happened to the worms? Are the worms here? I definitely saw the worms. Where are the worms?
Is he seeing the worms still? Were the worms? I didn't catch too much in the worms. So is he like, is this in my head? Is this real?
Definitely no worms. I think that, yeah, he's like reconciling with this statement. I think that much like the worms were left in his blood or whatever this infection is, this idea was left with him of like, what if Abby was right, right? Our old man Marine in the attic, and like the entire reality of this guy clocking Abby, knowing Boyd, all of that unsettled him enough as it is. But now he's got this thought in his mind that he started to fixate on of like, what if this isn't real? What if the worms aren't real? And that's dangerous, right? So I liked looking at it. Also, put on the list of things that I like, I'm watching way too closely and obsessing on the mirror while he's looking at himself in the opening scene. It looks as though there's like human fingernail scratch marks across the length of the mirror. It's a very like small detail, but it just was like jumping out to me as like this frantic kind of like scratching across the thing. Somebody like looking in a mirror trying to scratch their own face out doesn't feel great.
You know? No, that feels actually really bad.
Yeah.
That feels really bad in the context of From, and really
but very
any
appropriate for Fromsville, right?
Yeah. Like I could imagine one of the monsters just like tap, tap, tapping on the mirror, scratching it up. I would hope that it's one of the monsters and not one of the peeps, but you never know. I really did like that at the very least, Boyd and Ellis are kind of like really on good terms. That was one of the more cathartic moments towards the end of season one is when they hug it out. And here they're clearly carrying that energy forward. Ellis is really upset about Fatima and concerned about what's going to happen with her. But Boyd has that really good fatherly advice of like, if she has lost a piece of herself, you got to become that piece. We're going to hold on to each other and keep trying until we get home. We are the tethers, Rich. We are the tethers.
Indeed, we are. Live together, die alone, Boyd. I love this whole beat. The whole notion that like Ellis is pushing on him and Boyd's doing this thing of like not really explaining the whole story and like just jumping along and Ellis can't get his head around it because it's not really making sense to Boyd's credit. But he does like show up big for the emotional half of the conversation. Like he does super dad here at the end, like very good, the playful, like go get a better ring too. What do you do with this like wrapped wire around this girl's finger, you know? But it's
what's the better option though? Is there even like a better thing?
What's the guy gonna do? What's he gonna take like a washer off of something? I don't know. You don't have
you're in Fromsville. We've got regenerating pancakes, but we don't have regenerating jewelry, I don't think.
I guess that's true. There theoretically were a lot of dead people that were wearing jewelry at some point. So you got to wonder what's in that shed, the thrift store shed in the back, but might be considered uncouth.
Yes, so. I think uncouth is the word. I think so. Yeah, I think it would be uncouth. Why isn't Boyd talking about the worms to anybody? Who should he confide in if he confides in anybody? And is there a reason that you could talk me through narratively why Boyd would not be telling anybody about this? Or is this just like sort of show hijinks? Information has to be withheld for some sort of climactic moment down the line.
Well, I think especially when you look at the conversation at the end with Donna, as you pointed out, what Donna's saying to him is like, yo, you just came in here and dumped all this stuff on my plate. And all I'm worried about is like, are you back? I need you to be okay. I tried to be you and it went bad. Right. So I think the motivation.
Donna was really hard on herself. I feel like
she was, but this is the role of a leader, right? Maybe leaders should be hard on themselves. Josh.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah.
But so I think that if there were a motivation for Boyd to lie, it's in that. It's in this notion of like, I am the man. I am the guy who made the rule about the guns. I am the dude who like is the law, is the loud voice, is the respected figure that Randall is going to put the weapon down for, even though he doesn't know me from a hole in the wall. And if I start walking around knocking on the neighbor's doors asking if there's worms in my skin because I got a blood infection from the 100-year-old Marine in the magic tower of the forest, there's going to be a great deal of doubt about my capacity to fulfill this role.
Isn't there something to the idea that perhaps other people in the town should hear about the fact that there was an old man trapped in a castle who seems to know things about us and seems to know who my wife was and that she had this nightmare vision and thought that we were in a nightmare and that that is not information that a guy who seems like he's been locked away for 500 years should possess, and also somehow he's a Marine, so maybe he's a time traveler back to the future too, part two, with the hoverboards and everything. Maybe there's hoverboards here in Fromsville that we should be looking into. Don't call me chicken. I mean, damn, they should probably be sharing some information, I feel like.
It's very fair. They certainly should be sharing information, but this is one of those pesky situations where I think both these things are true, even though they entirely contradict one another.
Yeah.
Tighten up, Boyd.
Donna is really not feeling great about it. I think the only thing that Donna should feel bad about is shooting the tires on the bus. I keep looking at that bus, Rich, and I'm like, there's value here. It's now less valuable because the wheels on the bus have been shot by rounds, but we should probably maybe utilize that bus. Bus feels like it could be honestly, like, they could turn the bus into another restaurant. I feel like the bus has a lot of utility here in Frommsville for just like creature comforts and such.
Food trucks really big. It's hard to say. We're not exactly sure what year Frommsville is happening, but food trucks making a major comeback. Also, the bus probably, there's a spare tire on there. Just talking crazy again. I'm an old man who lives in the country. So this is how I think. I do give Donna credit for not shooting out more tires, but to Boyd's point, just think of all the lives that you saved, Donna, shooting that shotgun. It probably worked out good, better than the spike strip, which would have blown all the tires on the bus. So there's some potential there. But yeah, I would love to just hear back to say that she's going to turn this bus around. I'm waiting for it, Josh.
I'm just very glad that Kelly was nowhere near the spike strip. I feel like Kelly by the spike strip would have been somehow an even grislier episode of Frum than the Frum we got this week.
Nobody needs that.
Nobody needs that.
Especially not Kelly.
Definitely not Kelly. Definitely not any of us either. Beyond the spikes and the head mutilations that have occurred on Frum in this episode and just in this show generally, there are other assorted forms of nightmare fuel, Rich. I am specifically talking about these visions that Tabitha is having. Tabitha is starting to have these strange dreams now and starting to see waking nightmares. And in this episode, the waking nightmares she sees come in the form of, and this is how they are credited on from, Ghoulish Child number one and Ghoulish Child number two, Carmelo Marquette and Isabel Del Deegan playing the two ghoulish children who are straight out of the Overlook Hotel, Rich.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always creepier when there's two, when you're going to do tiny little creepy kids. You put two of them next to each other and it just like the energy exponentially grows, right? But these two were absolutely terrifying. They were very ghoulish. And they, like, they fully scared me, Josh. The first time they appeared, I like, oh, I'm not one to really get off put by a creepy kid. But these kids were horrifying looking, really scary.
Yeah, they seem like feral. They definitely seem hungry. They're also only visible to Tabitha in this moment, which is interesting because Ethan has previously seen, he saw the boy in white, and he seemed like he was one of the only people who could see that child. And so now there are these other two kids that it seems like Ethan cannot see, but Tabitha can. And so I wonder, like, does this become sort of like X-Men rules where like everybody has a superpower? Like everyone gets like the one thing. Does everyone in Frommsville get like one weird freaky deaky thing that they can connect to at a given point in time? And is this Tabitha's? And if so, God, I think that she drew poorly.
Yeah, she really did. As Boyd's that he can just find magic talismans. And yeah, I mean, it could be a thing. I could imagine that there are like different abilities manifesting. Again, like that Fatima Elgin over there, their conversation at the lake as she's talking about this notion that like, oh yeah, different people, like different things happen. And my friend used to say that it's like this place is calling to us and some of us were paying enough attention to hear it, right? This notion that like, God, Tabitha can't like reject this anymore. She has been like through the ringer at this point. She went through the scary caves where they sleep in the basement. She saw their like nightmarish Jenga tower. She's teleported through trees with Victor. There is no more like, oh, maybe. Right.
Right.
The theory wall is destroyed. And so to that extent, the idea that like now she's connected, that she could see the truth of it to some degree. Sure. Sure.
Yeah. I mean,
like, superpower to be able to see scary dead children.
She has a couple of interesting moments in this episode. One is the fact that she's seeing these creepy dead children. Another is that she had what appears to be a premonition of them, because when she was in the creepy caves, she saw that strange Jenga tower exactly as Ethan ended up building it. So is it Ethan connected to the thing? We've seen a couple of these characters this season alone having images of things that then appeared elsewhere, like Jade with the ventriloquist and the ventriloquist being in the caves and stuff like that. So I've got some questions. And I think, again, like now to be like less jokey about potential time travel-y components to this show, where like if people are unstuck in time and stuff, like does the fact that Ethan is making this Jenga tower, does that bode poorly for like, is Ethan on his way towards becoming one of these creepy creature things? I don't know. But the appearance of the Jenga tower after she had seen it, Rich, that's alarming to me.
Yeah, it really is alarming. I was thinking so much about the title and tethers and the way that like we're tethered to things from our past. And it's part of what I was thinking about, especially with Tabitha, with like a lost child. And now she's seeing these dead children. So the Jenga tower, like I'm trying to think of like the symbolism for it as the kids putting it together. Right. Yeah. Like it's precariously balanced, everything like stacked like so delicately. But the other thing is like at the top is this
kind of looks like a 3D version of like the symbol from Yellow Jackets. Is there something fair. Connecting these two shows? You gotta wonder.
I thought you were gonna say a 3D printed puzzle that we might see on Survivor.
Yeah, I could see that too. Yeah. Boogie. Yeah.
There just was this notion of like the ball at the top of it. You put this ball there and it had to like balance. And please, Josh, I'm overthinking it, which is I think what I'm here to do.
It but is for sure.
The like idea that it's like this teetering precipice of wooden blocks that is just so that this like perfect ball is able to balance on the top of it seems like indicative of to me of like how delicately everything is being held in place in this ecosystem, and now it's like just perfectly situated such to like preserve it in its current state, and that something's going to set it off. Also, though, it is just like could be scary foreshadowing for like the monster's going to take the boy.
Certainly could be. Thing is, we're going to have to take the boy. Tabitha also notes when she has this moment with Jim, where she's like, yeah, so I saw what the wires were connected to. You want to take a guess what they were connected to? And he's like, no. Do you want to just tell me? She says, okay, sure, I'll spoil it. They were connected to nothing. They were just dangling. They aren't connected to anything. The wires don't lead to anything. How do we have electricity with wires that don't lead into anything? I feel like it's just like furthering the idea that, yeah, they are just like trapped in some kind of a nightmare, Rich. None of like the rules don't really make sense because the rules of a nightmare don't make sense either.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm all in on this notion of like the collective unconscious, right? And the idea that they're creating this place to some degree. Like Brian and Kelly are named Brian and Kelly because that will lead Boy down this like spiraling rabbit hole of Brian and Kelly, right? We like create these connections. Like I love the beat that Fatima like talks about with Elgin. I keep going back to that scene at the pond, but where she like explains like, yeah, we've done it already. We've obsessed. We went down the rabbit holes. People have like been consumed by the details, the wheres and the whens, and like it all led to the same place, which is that we're trapped and we don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Right. So like that little like wink and a nod to us as like the compulsive TV viewers out here with our theory boards and our Charlie Day walls, I like appreciate that.
I feel like this was an episode that did a lot to get certain characters on each other's paths, but maybe didn't push them too far down those paths. So, for instance, I want to like shift over to Jade and Victor, where Jade and Victor are clearly linked. Jade is very interested in Victor and what Victor knows from all of his time here because of these like shared visions that we're talking about. Jade is seeing things that Victor has referenced, specifically the symbol that he keeps talking about. And he and Victor finally like really connect. He has taken Victor's violin. Victor doesn't like that he's taken my stuff. Don't go into my room. Victor, like Jade has a moment where it seems like maybe he's about to break through to Victor. And then Victor instead just like kind of marches on. I feel like, what does Jade say? He's like, well, F you too then. And then he like instantly regrets it. So I feel like that to me is like setting up the two of them as a potential two-hander. We just didn't really get too much advancement there. But if it was sort of just the teaser of what might be to come with those two characters linked to each other, I'm in. I really like Jade and Victor as a duo.
No, I had exactly the same instinct. You know, it's notable, but I think we're at like, you know, roughly the 5-hour mark of Jade on this show walking around like, Victor, I need to talk to Victor. Uh-huh, I mean, it was like the whole back end of season one. Then everything happens at the house. They've been separated. He says, I thought you were dead. So putting these two together is like got a lot of potential. I can't wait to kind of see where it goes. I felt even similarly with Kenny at the end and Sarah as he like finds her in the basement and like that connection, these like pairings of plot. Plugging the people in with one another felt really notable. Also, like Jim's reaction to Tabitha being like the wires go nowhere and his like half dead, incapacitated state, like climbing up into the chair, trying to like pull the sign down as like Pony Grandma comes rolling.
Hey, what's up with Jim? Like, why is Jim stay in bed? You've got bruised ribs, bro.
Jim's just not having it, man. Jim needs answers. He's an engineer, Josh. He's got to get to the bottom of things. It must make sense. He's got to write the questions on the wall. I just loved like a really like incapacitated Jim about to fall off a chair. It's like, Jesus, somebody get Jim a stepladder.
Yeah.
Why is nobody attending to Jim?
Yeah, Jim's just been left alone. Well, I don't know. Maybe because the other nurse is too busy dealing with the woman who has a metal pole shoved through her head.
That's very fair.
And is somehow still alive and hanging out. That needs to be addressed. I guess the only other thing from this episode that I wanted to make sure we got into was the ending and the return of Sarah. We had been wondering, where is Sarah? Where is Sarah? She stepped into a faraway tree, allegedly, alongside Boyd. We didn't know where she had wound up. Did it turn out then that she just wound up back in like Father Khatri's basement prison? She just got like sent back to start?
Well, so my big question is, did she even go through the tree, right? Like the way that the perspective of it all is shot, like she pushes Boyd through and she's like, I'll be right behind you.
Right. She get cold feet. Like she got to the edge of like the bungee jumping and she couldn't jump.
I don't know, man. I mean, like, I know Sarah's like won us over a little bit, but lest we forget, like 10 episodes ago, she's cutting people's tongues out in this very basement of the hospital, right? Like Sarah, I don't know that we can necessarily trust. I want to trust her, but like Sarah's hearing voices to the same way of like everybody gets their superpower and they all kind of suck. You know, Fatima's seeing dead children, but like Sarah hears these voices. What did they tell her to do? Did they tell her to push Boyd into the tree? Did she just come walking back? Did Jack Shepard, the magic dog leader?
Right.
I have questions, you know?
Yeah, I have questions as well. And I'm excited that it's Kenny who has found her because Kenny's dad is dead because of Sarah. And I can't remember if he knows that or not.
No.
He might be able to suspect it now because like Sarah's like bad guy stuff is no longer a secret. Like everybody knows about it, right? Like it was pretty public when she killed her brother. And so like, it feels like that's out there. And so if Kenny hasn't processed it yet, I feel like he's probably pretty close to finding this out, and him being alone with Sarah could pose like a really compelling moral dilemma for Kenny as he's becoming more and more of his own man, right? That's what Boyd wants for him. What is Kenny going to do with the information that Sarah is here? So it's a good cliffhanger for bringing Sarah back in and connecting her to a character that would have a lot of reason to not really want Sarah around, even though we know Sarah is connected to this place in some regard and probably important enough that she could be useful if we could trust her. Whether or not we could trust her is the bigger question.
It is. It's a good question. And correct me if I'm wrong out here, listeners, but I think that Kenny doesn't even know that Sarah is still around.
No one does,
except for Ellis, right? Yeah. Ellis is the only one who like runs into Boyd after she ends up out at the cabin. So the idea that she's holed up down here still alive is in and of itself a revelation. And then that leading back to the fact that she left the door open and ended up getting his father killed is a huge question for sure.
Big question. So curious where that's going to take us. Anything else from this episode of From that stands out to you, Rich? Anything you want to throw up onto the theory wall?
Oh, gosh, the theory wall. It's getting long.
We need to build a new one.
Yeah, the other notes here is like, you know, the Victor stuff with like the violin. I had real like questions there of like, clearly Victor has this violin. He seems to be like moved for a minute when he hears Jade playing it, and it like almost gives him pause of whether or not he wants to get it back. So yeah, like theory wall, Victor was like a child prodigy musician.
Yes. Yes.
On his way to like perform like Juilliard when he got sucked into this place. I don't know. Do you have crazy theories, Josh? What do you got for the theory wall?
No, I'm really wondering what it was that Kelly heard. Is there some sort of like metal connection? Did she just become a human antenna? We know that the radio tower picked up on some signals from seemingly the monsters or whoever are the monsters behind the monsters. So I kind of wish that we were just like a little bit more in her head, about all of that. But that was a very notable, like a very quick escalation. Was it just because like now she's dying or because there's something very frummy about the whole situation?
This is the other thing that really struck me is when Victor gets back into his room after little Ethan is like, I hope Victor's not mad at us. We went in his room. Like his room is trash. That place is ripped apart.
They should have cleaned up.
Yeah, at least a little bit. You would think that the little kid Ethan knows to clean up after he's done playing with somebody else's toys. But
bad boy.
It like struck me for a minute that like Victor is so menacing in that first scene when we have the Matthews family coming in and he's kind of scary. And then we get the like, no, he's harmless. Like he's been here forever. He's harmless. He's weird, but he's harmless. And we now are like, oh no, Victor's harmless. Like he's weird, but he's harmless.
Right.
And so through this whole like collective unconscious notion, if the idea that they are all in this collective nightmare and they're all kind of feeding their own negativity and phobias and kind of demons into it. I wonder if like Victor is at some like source point of all of this and like the drawings and the way that Ethan like talks about the story and the quest and he has the book that he's so tied into in season one. Like, is Victor like writing this children's book for us? Like everything down love to like that. Far away trees. Like those are real books that I talked about.
Westeros is in the actually exists in the eye of a giant named McCumber. Is Frumsville actually in the eye of a giant man child named Victor?
Exactly. So I just wonder if that's the there that like Victor is like created these things, at least up for the monsters. Yeah, put that on the theory wall. That's like my big one for the week, Josh.
Yeah, I like that. I think if there is a dreamer who is like sort of like dreaming the greater from shenanigans, I feel like Victor would be really high up on the theory wall for something like that. So really curious to know. I think a fun episode of the show. I feel like we're still sort of in like season two chess pieces territory. We're like getting it. We're getting all of our ducks in a row. We're figuring out where everybody is going and they're all going in the same direction. And unfortunately, that direction is like horrifying and violent. But that's what we love from we've got more from coming up next week as season two continues chugging along. Rich, This Way Gone is the name of next week's episode 4 of season 2. This Way Gone. I don't know. Are people lost? I think feels like just another week of From, if so.
Yeah, it really does. This Way Gone is a very Frummian title. I'm thinking about context. It could be like a misprint on a road sign, This Way maybe. Gone, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what it's all about. Of course, make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Our RSS link when you search by URL in your podcast player of choice, you want to plug in postshowrecaps.com/from. Search by URL, and that's the URL, postshowrecaps.com/from. Your ratings and reviews, tremendously appreciated here on the From Podcast. If you want to get in any feedback, you can email in josh@postshowrecaps.com. We'll get it onto the show. If you want commercial-free versions of this podcast, go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You'll get ad-free versions of the From Podcast at any level that you sign up to support Post Show Recaps. Rich, what else is going on in your neck of the woods? Hopefully has nothing to do with metal bars, though I know metal bar shaped weapons are a part of your current podcasting load.
All lightsabers all the time, baby. The great Austin Smith and myself are talking about Star Wars Jedi Survivor. It is not a reality competition. It is not a brand steal. It is a video game, and it's pretty good. So Austin and I have been covering that every week. The Dark Rewatch podcast with Grace and Ariel. PSRPGs coming up. I'm streaming D&D over twitch.tv/DM Philly. You can always catch me over there weekly throwing some dice around with my friends. And at DM Philly on Twitter, my DMs are open if you want to hit me up about your crazy From theories for the From Theory Wall.
Your DMs Philly. Go to @DMPhilly. I'm @RoundHoward wherever you can find me, including right here on the From Podcast on Post Show Recaps, continuing next week. Until then, everybody take care. Bye-bye.